This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Oh man, I made the music sound really bad there, and I didn't intend to. I think I pressed two buttons at once. Sometimes I feel that's terrible work on the board here for the host on a Monday afternoon. We have my friend Josh Krasauer coming up at the bottom of the hour. He is the editor-in-chief of the Jewish Insider. You see him on Fox a lot. We'll talk about the politics of the day. We're going to do that a little bit here with Susan Crabtree as well. But she's also written a new book. She is the Real Clear Politics national political correspondent and the co-author of a new book called Fool's Gold, The Radicals, Con Artists, and Traitors Who Killed the California Dream and Now Threaten Us All. Susan, welcome back to 97.1 FM Talk. How are you?
I'm doing great. I just very excited about this new book. We have excerpts in both the Washington Examiner and the New York Post coming out tomorrow and Fox News this morning.
Yes, I've heard a lot about it, and I want to find out a lot more, but let me just kind of ask you to react to the politics of the day. And by the way, the politics of the day is moving constantly, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You can't keep up. You have to constantly watch.
So here we are in a day where the Dow and the Nasdaq has not been very good. And we know that the Democrats, I heard Hakeem Jeffries in a soundbite here at the top of the hour, they're going to use this to their advantage as much as possible. But what would you say about the landscape right now? Because it is some tricky waters here with Trump. He's encouraging some patience with people. But it's hard for me to believe that there aren't some people out there that supported the president that might be a little nervous right now, just from the economy standpoint.
Yes, yeah, so you think he said you were going to have some short-term pain, disturbances, he called it, in the State of the Union. And, you know, that it's going to be interesting to see how long the American public really wants to put up with these disturbances. We've had inflation for so long. Now we have the stock market getting hit. Some of his biggest supporters, Trump's biggest supporters, including the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal, are acting, you know, getting the jitters a bit. But Donald Trump says this is in the nation's long-term interest to try to use tariffs to bring back manufacturing to this country. And there are some signs that they're a success early on. I believe there was an automobile manufacturer who came back to Indiana just last week. One sign that they're attempting to reverse some of the exporting of our manufacturing overseas.
Well, one thing that I've learned here in the past 8 years in particular is that I'm always a little bit more patient with what the reaction might be to Trump because, look, the stock market could be way up here in the next couple of days. I don't know what's going to happen. If it's a long-term correction, we're going to have bigger issues and the polling's not going to be very good. But to a certain extent, we've seen some of this stuff happen with whether it's the previous administration or even earlier this year where people have panicked and there's a lot of things where emotion, you know, shows and then all of a sudden people settle down very quickly. But with Trump, Susan, you know this is always exaggerated.
Oh, certainly. That's exactly what he. Most people, it's a divisive issue. You're going to have the MSNBCs of the world, the Rachel Maddows of the world, you know, with hair on fire and saying that this is the end of the world. But Trump is asking for your patience because so much of our manufacturing in this country, if you look in the South, all of the cotton factories that used to just be a mainstay of the community and providing a lot of jobs has been exported to China. And even in terms of our auto manufacturing, exported to Mexico. So he's trying to bring back those jobs and the job and to hit China where it hurts with tariffs so that they're not, we have just basically handed over on a silver platter all of our cheap goods and manufacturing to China. And maybe we shouldn't be expecting, you know, all of this cheap labor to be coming from China because it obviously is being produced in part by Uyghur labor, and that's forced labor camps going on in China. And do the American people really know that that's what's going on?
Not a lot of them.
And it's disturbing.
So you mentioned China. There's a good segue here. The book is called Fool's Gold, The Radicals, Con Artists, and Traitors Who Killed the California Dream and Now Threaten Us All. But there is a very, very strong component with China and Gavin Newsom, isn't there?
Absolutely. We didn't have to dig too far to find it. We saw this. What was intriguing with us, we saw that he had at one of his vineyards in Napa Valley, he has a big Chinese shipping box that's the office of the vineyard, and he likes to display that online. And we thought, what's going on here? Well, we found out that when he was lieutenant governor of California, he started this group called China SF. It's a nonprofit that he said was to help import Chinese companies and then help Chinese companies be, it was sort of like the gateway to San Francisco and to California. And more than 100 Chinese companies then came into California and started doing business here. But the reverse wasn't true. The California companies and U.S. companies didn't go back to China, which was interesting as we saw that that Gavin Newsom had some trademarks on his wine that were made about the same time that he was doing these trips with China SF to China. And he hooked up with a business tycoon named Vincent Low, who had deep ties to the Communist Party over there. And lo and behold, his Vincent Low's business were coming into California, and he was going to pour his wine in do a wine tasting on one of Vincent Low's businesses in buildings in Shanghai. So where is the benefit to the California consumer and the American consumer from all of this? The Chinese companies, and I can go into greater detail. One of them was a solar company, and they were just dumping their goods, subsidized by the Chinese government, onto the California market and the U.S. market, and they were doing all kinds of deals with California companies and even Arizona companies. With this SunTech Chinese solar company. And meanwhile, Solyndra, which we were subsidizing with taxpayer dollars and became a joke because it went bust, it was based in Silicon Valley, it was going bust because it couldn't compete with the SunTech's prices. So actually, Solyndra ended up suing SunTech, and it was found in their favor. So what is the benefit of all of this? Besides Gavin Newsom's own self-interest and his wine exports to China, what was the benefit to the U.S. citizen, the California citizen?
I think that's a rhetorical question. I think the answer is no, right? But when they're cutting, the other thing about this is that these Chinese companies are getting really, really big tax breaks and incentives from the state of California and from the city of San Francisco, right?
Absolutely, that's what it's about. And we found out that the San Francisco Chamber of Commerce was behind this, and it was also being sponsored, this China SF group that Newsom started, by Huawei, which is a company, sort of a surveillance company and tech company that is banned by not only the U.S., but the United Nations. So It's the ties are to China are very, very deep. Run very, very deep with Newsom, and we have also he asked TikTok of all companies to for $300,000 in behested payments. That means in California they're illegal. That the governor gets to direct a corporation gets to ask a corporation for money for charitable causes. Well, in this case, it was to promote Gavin Newsom's own COVID mandate.
Isn't that convenient, right? Wow. So you outline all of this. So the book is called Fool's Gold, The Radicals, Con Artists, and Traitors Who Killed the California Dream and Now Threaten Us All. How much beyond the China connection do you go? Because obviously one of the situations with looking at California from afar, like here in the Midwest in St. Louis, is we see all the nutty, kooky things that they do, even in their state, with the whether it's red state or some of the laws that they pass are not actually, you know, going after criminals, etc. Do you cover all of that as well, or is much of this just focused on the Newsom-China connection?
Well, that was the great work of Peter Schweitzer, my co-authors. He's Peter Schweitzer's research director. They specialize in China connections.
Yeah.
So that was their great work. I worked on most of the other issues, and we go through in the final chapter of all of the failed policies that California is exporting to the rest of the country in terms of its kooky environmental policies, its EV mandates, its mandates on diesels and truck gasoline. It just goes on and on. We also have a whole section on Jennifer Siebel Newsom's transgender documentaries. They call them gender justice films that she screens in public schools across the country for a small fee. And it is, I think she's made $1.4 million just in screening her transgender films.
Yeah, we got to talk about this. All right, but this I was unaware of, and I'm guessing a lot of the audience is unaware of. And this kind of comes, you know, obviously the book was all put together before Newsom did his little flip flop or addressed something with the trans sports issue, and I want your opinion on that. But Jennifer Siebel Newsom, is she? This is what Susan writes. She's known as the gender neutral first partner in California. That in and of itself is true. Kind of makes me want to throw up in my mouth a little bit.
Yeah, that was her nod. She insisted on calling her the first partner. So that was her nod to LGBTQ plus issues. But yeah, she is doing this. She one of her films has the ASA actually has curriculum too that includes the gender-bred person which has like a Mr. Potato Head type of mix and match. You can just mix and match their gender on a person on a gender-bred person. And it's interesting to me that those films are being funded by behested payments too, including from PG&E, a major utility that is responsible for causing the deadliest fire in California history. It was found guilty of 84 counts of manslaughter in the Paradise Fire in 2018. And Gavin Newsom continues to take money from them in the form of money for his homeless ballot initiatives that he's asking $6 billion more for, even though he's already spent $24 billion and there was an audit and it was unaccounted for. It was basically up in smoke. We don't know where the $24 billion for homelessness went, but we do know that there have been numerous scandals involving the state's homeless money, including more than $100 million to a company called Shangri-La. You can't make this up.
No way.
And the CFO was a 20-something, and he was spending it on Beverly Hills rental homes, fabulous rental homes, luxury cars, and jewelry for his girlfriend.
Awesome. That sounds just about right for California. Susan Crabtree is here. The book is called Fool's Gold. So one of the things that I pointed out quite a bit in the fall, I don't remember much of the national media focusing in on this, but you had a state of California that looked like, and they did, pass Proposition 36 that said, hey, wait a second. We think that if you steal a bunch of stuff from CVS or Walgreens or Macy's or whatever, you should actually be prosecuted for that. And that was not what was happening in California. But Gavin Newsom and the LA Times both were against Proposition 36, even though 80% of the damn state was for it. If that doesn't show how out of touch you are on key issues, I don't know what does.
yeah, now the LA Times publisher is trying to change its editorial page because of that. And you had Nathan Hochman, who is a new prosecutor who ran as a Republican before, then ran as an independent, oust George Gascon, the district attorney in LA. He's the one who wrote that soft on crime. It was called Proposition 47 in 2014. And guess who was the first elected official to sign on? None other than Gavin Newsom. So that soft on crime that made it, lowered it from a felony to a misdemeanor. As long as you rob, you steal less than $950 in one swoop. So the California voters, including the LA voters, rejected that in a huge way in November, and they replaced the prosecutor who wrote that law. And now we have Proposition 36, but now we have Gavin Newsom and the state legislature not funding it properly.
There's always a wrinkle. But this is a guy, Susan, that, you know, how does this square with what he's trying to, like, go back to the flip, or I don't even know if it was a flip, but he had some wiggle room there on the transports issues. This guy, clearly, he wants the national profile. He thinks he can be president, right?
Yes, he is trying to, everything he does is performative, not performance-based, and that's why he thinks he can run for president via podcast with that while his state remains in the shambles. It is absolutely abhorrent to me that he says there, he acknowledges that trans athletes, biological men competing in women's sports is unfair, deeply unfair, right. He said, but he's not changing his policies at all. In fact, I asked his office last week whether he's going to change a 2013 law that allows California students, trans students, compete, biological men, boys could compete with girls at a high school level and university level. And their office did not respond to that. They just pointed me to the further comments about his sympathies with trans people because they're suicidal. But There's no deep explanation of why they're suicidal. Whether the act of being trans itself makes you, you know.
I actually think that the evidence, and you probably know this, I think the evidence shows that that it does make you more suicidal because of the mental aspects of the transition. That's the big misnomer. They try to claim that all these kids are committing suicide because you're not allowing them to be trans. That's not even close or remotely to the truth. And I think Gavin Newsom probably knows that. Well, listen, Susan, thanks so much for jumping on here. Fool's Gold, the radicals, con artists, and traitors who killed the California dream and now threaten us all. Is it out tomorrow? Is that when the book comes out?
Yes, it's out tomorrow, and we expect more exclusives in the morning for the New York Post and other places. So it's just very thankful for your interest, and we need to hold these California politicians' feet to the fire because the mainstream media does not do so out here at all.
No, they do not. That's absolutely you. We know that here in St. Louis. I promise you that. Thank you, Susan Crabtree. Keep on them, okay?
Appreciate it.
All right, take care. Yeah, the book is out tomorrow, Fool's Gold. Some of the nonsense. I mean, it's just really crazy when you think about what happens in California. For him to come out, like, I did not know this about his wife, that she was so involved in the trans issue. I mean, how does that even square with what he said during that podcast? I mean, he's obviously full of you-know-what.
He is.
He's just trying to have it both ways, is what these politicians try to do. So she's actually, the way that Susan describes her is one of the first prominent politicians to defy state law and issue. No, this is Newsom overall. Yeah. So she says he was one of the first prominent politicians to defy state law and issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples, is now siding with conservatives with his stated opposition to biological men participating in women's sports. But again, that's a very nuanced issue. And she kind of gets into this issue with Jennifer Siebel Newsom, known as the gender-neutral first partner in California. I mean, just hearing that makes you kind of laugh. Doesn't it?
Yeah.
And she's made a bunch of money from showing these documentaries in schools. And some of this stuff, you know, I don't know. I'd have to read deeper into this particular article. But some of this stuff is targeted toward kids that are even younger than my daughter, which does not in any way, shape, or form seem appropriate. But in California, of course, it is. Josh Kroshauer weighing in on the politics of the day coming up next. Was I out of
my head? Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball.
Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
Oh, we had so much fun at our fish fry on Friday in the city. We're going to go to Cottleville on Friday. Hope to see you there, Knights of Columbus Hall. My friend Chris Smith will be there. Chris is the listener, the dude. He's a good friend of mine now that was shot in the head several years ago. They did a piece on 60 Minutes. Not 60 Minutes, what the hell? 48 Hours. Not 60 Minutes, thank God. That's the worst show on CBS. No, 48 Hours they did in the spring. It was the, I think it was 3 years after he was shot. Chris used to call the show and became a part of my show when I was on KMOX. And then we became friends because mainly because I weaseled out of a wager when he said, hey, Trump's going to win. And I said, if he does, this was in 2016, you can shave my head. I weasel out of the bet. We become friends. But then he was shot when the girl he was with, the woman he was with, died the night before Thanksgiving up in Farmersville, Illinois. And that's what the 48 Hours piece was on. And that's what his book is going to be about. He's got a new book that's coming out. And we're going to visit with him on Friday afternoon at the fish fry. He'll tell you all about it. I know he's been texting me nonstop, bugging me about it all week. Let's see here. I even have the name of the book. It is called, hold on here, My Fatal First Date, A True Life Story of Survival, Tragedy, Inspiration, Triumph, and Faith. And his story really is amazing. So that's coming up. Oh, Brian Kilmeade. Brian is less than 2 weeks away. It's the 22nd. It's a week from this Saturday night at the Factory in Chesterfield. Great, great venue. We are very close to a sellout, and we're probably even closer on the VIP experience. If you'd like to do the meet and greet and hang and see some of the folks from 97.1 FM Talk in particular, if you go to briankilmeade.com, you can get the meet and greet and the VIP passes, which is kind of fun. Right now, we have audio cut of the day coming up before the end of the hour. Our friend Josh Krasauer back with us to talk some politics. He's the editor-in-the-chief of the Jewish Insider. You see him on Fox all the time. It's been a bit, by the way. How are you?
Mark, it's great to be back with you. Spring training is here. Baseball season right around the corner, and politics always in the news.
I don't know what you're talking about with baseball. What's that? We're not discussing that in St. Louis. I don't know if you've heard.
Well, you guys are so, you know, you've had so much success. It's hard to imagine the Cardinals not being the NL Central favorites, but we'll see this year.
Look, I'm telling you, there's a lot of concern here. And, you know, I think the hope right now is, and we are informed baseball folks, right? So we know it's going to take a little time, but my point there is the fan base is educated, but still, if you don't get something that's entertaining on the field, and maybe they will, you know, they could still even finish 500, maybe they'll exceed expectations. It's just that I and a lot of people, Josh, don't remember a year like this for a while.
Yeah, look, I mean, we as a Nationals fan, we had a World Series ring in 2019. Then the COVID pandemic hit. We never got to really celebrate it the year after. And it's been, I think we've been the worst team in baseball for the last 5 years. So I get the ups and downs of baseball or any sport. But, you know, like I actually think the Cardinals are going to be halfway decent this year, but we'll see.
Well, you know, they could exceed expectations. We're going to hope for that. Let's talk about the situation in the swamp. All right. Talk about a situation that's not the same as it has been before. What is just your overall feeling? Because I'm sure there's a lot of stuff behind the scenes where there's some uncomfortability, even maybe amongst Republicans. I don't know what you'd say about the Democrats right now, but how would you just assess the landscape 50, 60 days into this administration?
Yeah, well, look, the biggest difference between the first Trump administration and the second, this current term, is that Trump is not being checked at all, both from certainly not from Democrats who are in disarray. But, you know, one of the defining features in the first administration, a lot of people use the word chaos to describe the first term. But in reality, there were a lot of debate and discussion and argument and amid that chaos, and some of Trump's worst impulses, like on tariffs, and foreign policy, I think were constrained. And actually, there was good policy that came out of all that chaos. There's a lot less team of rivals, a lot more team of loyalists in this second term. And Trump has certainly affected a whole lot of change in the 7 weeks that he's been president. But look at the markets today and in the last week or two. You look at the concern among our European allies on his foreign policy, and you look at Canada worried about what the United States is doing with the tariffs and with these notions of making Canada a 51st state. I think that's rhetorical, but it's a strange approach. And there's a worry that there's not enough adults in the room, not enough people who can maybe have that debate, have a discussion that took place so publicly in the first term. You're seeing a lot more loyalists, a lot more people not wanting to have that debate in the second term. And it could lead to some problems down the road for the president.
Let's talk, though, about Friday. You know, I had my Reardon Roundtable Friday afternoon. We have a lot of fun here this time of year. We fish fry broadcast, and we had our first one, Josh. But there was interesting reporting that was in the New York Times that afternoon about a cabinet meeting that kind of blew up with Marco Rubio and Elon Musk kind of getting into it. And what my takeaway was, I'm interested in your takeaway, I was like, okay, good. I'm glad that this stuff is happening. Maybe I wish it was happening even in front of the cameras like the Zelensky stuff. But I guess the point of that was there's pushback by some of these cabinet members on Elon right now.
Yeah, so it's funny that you bring that up because it's obviously one of the big stories of the first month. And you won't find anyone more than me that wants to kind of cut the bureaucracy, cut the red tape. It's not just waste. It's the fact that you can't build a railroad in California in like 10 years. And the degree that the federal and even the state governments are as inefficient as they are, as wasteful as they are, has been a product of government. It's only been getting worse over the years. You know, the problem is that it doesn't seem like there's a rhyme or reason in what Musk is doing, other than pretty much firing everyone who's got less than 2 years of experience, what they call probationary period for these government workers. And the problem is, and you saw this reported out from that big cabinet meeting last week, that apparently Musk is firing essential air traffic controllers that are trying to prevent air crashes in the sky. They had to rehire some of these nuclear regulators. I mean, so there's something amiss. Like there's a way. It takes this long to build up government. It'll take a little bit of time to actually find the bad people, the incompetent people, to pass laws.
Yeah.
Get rid of a lot of these protections in the civil service. But you can't do it overnight. And I think Elon Musk has this very Silicon Valley view that all you have to do is go into the computer systems and fire a lot of people, and that's going to solve the problem. It doesn't cut a whole lot out of the budget line, and it's certainly not making the government more productive or more effective.
My sense was, though, after Friday, and the takeaway from that reporting, I'm going to have to trust that it was accurate in the New York Times, is that Trump kind of gets that. And he even used the word, like, we're going to take a scalpel to this. So there might have been some, you know, let's burn it down and see what happens. And I guess maybe I could speak just for people who are pro-Doge right now. And I get everything you just said, and I have some, you know, certainly some concerns, and I'm not a fan of the tariffs at all. But one of the things that I think a lot of us feel is that none of this has ever happened before, Josh. And, you know, earlier in the show this afternoon, there's a story that's in the Washington Post. I talked about it in the monologue. I mentioned this to Ted Nugent today as well. The story is about how D.C. is going to have, you know, issues because they want to revert back to the 2024 budget. And that's $1 billion, $1 billion more in 2025. So When people look at that, we're saying, wait a second, we can't just raise our household budgets by so much when we don't have income coming in. They see how government operates, and they've just had enough of it.
Well, the first point I would make is that the biggest driver of all the government spending is entitlement programs.
No doubt.
And I think, you know, the rubber hits the road where you say, well, can we raise the retirement age a year? And they can save a lot more money that way. And then these same people say, well, don't come after my Social Security. Don't come after my Medicare. So it's tricky because that's why it's easier to spend. Now, look, one of the weird things about government, but I always found unusual, my dad's a long-time civil servant, and he retired recently. And I found it amazing that you basically had almost on guaranteed protection. Your job was secure after 2 years. You couldn't get fired unless you just went so above and beyond like the rules of the job. So that's part of the problem. Elon Musk needs to, the only way you can really get rid of people in government is if they're less than 2 years of experience or were recently promoted, I guess, is the other exception. But it is very, very hard to fire incompetent people, and that's part of the problem. In any other private sector job, you know, if you're not good at your job, you're evaluated and you can actually get let go. But that's not the case in government. It keeps growing and growing and growing. So I'm sympathetic to the frustrations that government keeps growing and growing. And when a Republican president takes office, the best they can do is slow that growth.
Yeah.
At least that's the way it seems. Now, look, there are ways to you know, there is a legal and very institutional way of reducing the government workforce that the Clinton administration, Al Gore was actually a big champion of this back in the 90s. But it takes three, 4 years for it to effectuate. So, I mean, Elon Musk does not operate under that time
table. No,
I don't know how long he's going to be in the White House. So he's doing it in a very, I would argue, reckless way that's hurting Donald Trump. That's hurting Donald Trump's political standing. And, you know, I know Sean Duffy, I knew him over at Fox, and I think he's a pretty conservative guy. And he spoke up in this meeting and he's worried about air safety because of some of the cuts that Elon Musk wanted to make. And that gets my ears perked up.
Yeah.
And I think it's beyond just the government waste and fraud and abuse.
Look, there's some concerns. I would agree. And by the way, you won't find someone stronger than me on the preaching about the entitlements, because I've said this consistently through the last couple of decades, actually. And, you know, look, here's a guy, and you can appreciate this because you know that I go way back with him. But I was talking with a former member of Congress over the weekend, and Paul Ryan's a guy that's persona non grata in Republican circles or in, you know, MAGA circles right now. Well, that was a guy that tried to address the entitlements. And when Trump says last week, you know, $2 trillion deficit, we're going to you can't balance that without cuts to the entitlements or without adjusting them. There's just no possible way. So I want honesty on that front in particular.
Yeah, no, look, I mean, that's sort of the tension, because that is actually what Trump ran against. There were all these kind of Paul Ryan types that dominated the Republican Party, even when Trump was president the first time, that were trying to pass laws that could restrain the growth or cut some of the entitlement spending. And that was not Trump's coalition.
No,
a lot of
no.
The new Trump voters actually wanted that. They actually were not like small government types, which is why it's unusual. I mean, you know, like, I think there's an ideological component to this, and there also may be a conflict of interest issue with Musk, because he has a lot of his company, SpaceX, along with Tesla, has a lot of issues before the government, and there is a conflict of interest there, where someone this powerful, this wealthy, is also tied up in government to the degree that he is. But look, I think there's an ideological component too, where you go after USAID and all these, you know, projects going abroad that may not be seen as useful or efficient from an average American's viewpoint. But I think where the rubber really hits the road is when you're going after services that Americans can appreciate that are valuable, like air safety, nuclear safety, even the parks, National Weather Service. There's some real, the cuts are going deep to the bone, and they're not being, I think you can cut a lot of staff and cut a lot of waste, but it doesn't seem like running an AI program and getting inside the bowels of government and just, you know, willy-nilly in a few weeks, laying off tens of thousands of people is the most effective way of doing it.
Well,
I don't
we're going to find out.
Going to make the government more efficient.
We're going to find out. There's going to be pushback, and I've you know, warned the audience about this, because I do think that there's members of Congress that are getting calls about this. They'll continue to get calls. But let me have you address the politics of all this on the other side, because this is what you hear from the Democrats.
Elon Musk.
Elon Musk and his hackers don't know.
To think that Elon Musk or Donald Trump give a about our public
schools. That kind of goes on, Josh, and you get the point. But that's something they think is going to be a winning strategy, right? Going after who they call President Musk at this point.
Yeah, I mean, Democrats, what was the line about the Palestinians, Yasser Arafat? They never know how to miss an opportunity. They never miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity. The Democratic Party is in disarray, and they've still, we saw this in the president's response or his speech before Congress last week, that, you know, you have these far left Democrats that are acting, you know, reprehensibly. They couldn't even, you know, stand up for some of the more emotional moments. You know, you don't have to clap for a lot of things, but there were some moments that should have been bipartisan ones, and they weren't. And you have, you know, look, you have sort of these these old line Democrats, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, shrieking in front of government buildings instead of actually talking about the things that, yeah, that are concerning that we just discussed on the show about some of the cuts and hitting too close to the bone. You have the most polarizing, unpopular Democrats standing before the cameras. Chuck Schumer, I think, you know, was screaming and yelling. And these are the least popular. The party is just their brand is in the toilet. And look, they went. That's why Kamala Harris lost, is that she was so far to the left on social and cultural issues, so out of the mainstream, that the party was seen as an unacceptable alternative. And they, you look at the trans issue and how Gavin Newsom came out and tried to talk some common sense into the party, and they still don't want to take that lesson. This is the big challenge, you know, not just for politics. It's not just going to be on the Trump side, but it's going to be whether Democrats can actually build that moderate coalition that can actually be a competitive party, or whether they are going to get further and further left and marginalize themselves, even though Trump may have his own issues. The Democrats have not shown themselves to be a serious governing party right now.
I'm going to take the latter for 500, Alex. That's what I would say, because I think a lot of the pundits even realize they're lost right now. Josh Krasauer, always great to have you on. I hope you're enjoying this new administration. There's never a lack of things to talk about, right?
It's keeping me busy, that's for sure. I almost forgot the last 4 years.
But all right, well, happy spring training, and we'll talk soon. We'll talk baseball and politics soon. Thank you, Josh.
Thanks, Mark.
Well, Fred has a fair amount of stuff that is scheduled for the show tomorrow already. Of course, he left me a note here, and I kind of forgot what it was all about. But I can tell you this, Sue, because we're going to do something that we tried last week, and we're going to just call it like... Telephone Tuesdays. How about that?
I like it.
That's kind of got a nice ring to it, right? So I've taken calls a couple of times in the past 3 weeks, I think two out of the last 3 weeks. And it's not something that I used to do a lot, right? But we want good contributions from the audience. We got those the last couple of times. So I figured maybe we're going to just for a stretch, I don't know how long this is going to last, but I'm going to commit to it. How about this? Through the month of March.
All right.
And one reason is, can I just be honest about the reason?
Yes, please.
Fred is going to Japan next weekend. You know that, right?
I do.
So Ethan's going to be doing double duty to a certain extent. And if we do Telephone Tuesdays, which I like, Fred came up with that, we don't have to do as much in the 4 o'clock hour. We got Sue's News. We got Telephone Tuesdays.
Exactly.
So there's some method to our madness, if you will. But I also like touching base with the audience. Maybe we'll hear from some people that we saw at the fish fries, or some people excited about this fish fry, or maybe just someone wants to ask Sue Thomas a question. You can also do that. So that's tomorrow in the 4 o'clock hour on 97.1 FM Talk.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Okay, I got to test this one a little bit, and I did on Sue just because there's a visual component of this. I'm going to walk you through it. You had not seen this until I showed you during the break, right?
It's nuts.
There is a high school sprinter in Virginia who suffered a concussion and a potential skull fracture when her competitor smashed her in the back of the head with a relay baton during their race. So this is, you're going to hear from both
weird.
These people. This is Kaylin Tucker, who is from Brookville High School. She's the second leg runner for the 4x200 meter relay in the state indoor championships at Liberty University on Friday. So Tucker, who had earned a silver in the 55 meter dash earlier in the meet, was attempting to cut into lane one during a battle for second place in the front pack as she was rounding turn four. So this is at the final turn of this race. Instead of blocking her entry, Tucker's opponent, who is from a different high school, seemingly slowed down, wound up her arm back, and smacked the baton across Brookfield's head, on the other girl's head. So basically, she's smashing this girl on the head with the baton. So here's the girl who was hit, first and foremost.
When you go on the other side of the track, you have to cross into lane one, you have to merge in. And as I was coming up on her, she kind of like made me like get cut off a little bit, so I backed away. And then as we got around the curve, she kept bumping me in my arm. And then finally, when we got off the curve, I like slowly started passing her, and then that's when she just hit me with the baton and I fell off the track. I could feel like a headache coming up, so I just set out. But I recently went to the doctor, and they prescribed me with a concussion and a possible fractured skull.
Look, she got whacked on the head,
fractured.
And as soon as, I think she gets hit twice with the baton, and then she falls over. The other chick was disqualified, but now Yeah, but wait, you haven't heard the best part of this. She's going to claim, and she is claiming, that this was all an accident.
Body has feelings. So, you're physically hurt, but you're not thinking of my mental, right? They're going off of one angle. A couple times hitting her, my baton got stuck behind her back like this, and it rolled up her back. I lost my balance, and when I pumped my arms again, she got hit. I know my intentions, and I would never hit somebody on purpose. They're assuming my character, calling me ghetto, racist slurs, death threats, all of this just because of a 9-second video.
Well, I certainly wouldn't support that, but both of these girls are African-American, by the way. And here's one thing that I know, and anyone who has seen this video, and Sue, you saw, she did not hit this girl by accident. There is absolutely no doubt that this was on purpose, and she whacked her on the head so hard that she fell over and has a concussion. So we can kind of be empathetic to her mental challenges, but she deserved to get disqualified, yeah. And maybe even worse than that. I've never seen anything like it.
Crazy.
I really haven't. There you go. There's your audio cut of the day. We're back tomorrow at 3. Telephone Tuesdays in the 4 o'clock hour. How about that? Yeah.
Get more at 971talk.com.